All right, peace, family. Once again, I'm back after a very long time. And please excuse my voice. But yeah, back again with another episode of Tech Building Podcast. When the devil tries to keep you down, you always show up with strategy. And this is something that was not planning on this being my next episode, but I just feel like I have to do it. And it's happening on, I'm recording this on Monday, April 29th, the day before or the few hours before game 5 between the Lakers and the Nuggets. Lakers obviously down 3-1. And the outcome of the series doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what I'm talking about. I mean, I guess really, unless, you know, LeBron and the Lakers go on a crazy somehow, you know, comeback like they did before. But the first GOAT episode had a lot to do with Tom Brady. And this GOAT episode will be a little bit more LeBron focused. So I want to get right into it. And so I kind of like what I've heard other people say it, but I feel like I've said it a lot recently, and I kind of call it walk it down policy, or the activity of walking a subject down. And I kind of want to explain what that means, just to kind of lay the base for what I'm trying to talk about. And so walking it down to me really means when there is a topic or a subject and we're trying to kind of get to a consensus or get to a level of equal understanding among two or more people, I think you really kind of have to walk it down based on principle by principle. And you don't really want to get, and I think walk is important because that means you're really taking your time, you know, and you're really trying to get to the nuts and bolts of what a thing really is and not get so caught up and bogged down with the emotion of it or how something will make you feel. And so I feel like when it comes to talking about LeBron, I think that he's just a very polarizing individual in the sports world. And, you know, my bro says, you know, he's a balanced LeBron James supporter. And I will kind of jokingly say, kind of using his language, I would say I'm a balanced LeBron James detractor. You know, I don't necessarily detract from LeBron because at the end of the day, it's my brother. And I think he's obviously one of the greatest. He's one of the greatest all-time basketball players ever. He's all-time great. And his legacy is already solidified the whole nine yards. So I'm saying, I kind of jokingly say that about being a LeBron James detractor, if you will. But I will say that I consider Kobe Bryant to be my GOAT because I think he's really done in the sphere of basketball. I think he's done the most with the least. And I will come back to that. So that's about walking it down. So I want to kind of walk this GOAT thing down because there's a lot of different elements to it. And I will also say this. It's a science-based subjective conversation because at the end of the day, it's really all opinion. But I think there are certain principles that we can borrow from the field of science and incorporate it into a conversation of this magnitude and just make it more fun and interesting and kind of take it away from pure subjectivity and find, you know, a balance between objectivity and subjectivity, just using elements of science. And so I also feel like it's important to talk about my history when it comes to how I view competition. And I will say that I am very happy that, you know, I was given a little bit of time in between recording this and actually being able to put it out. Because at the time of the conversation, I was very, very, very passionate. I was very turned up, as it were, behind this. And I'm glad I got a little bit of time to calm down. So I was born 1989, as I mentioned in the part one of the GOAT. And hopefully I don't have to do a part three. I think the two most polarizing GOAT conversations is between LeBron and Tom Brady. So hopefully I don't have to revisit this. Maybe, Patrick Mahomes will make me have to do a part three, but hopefully not. I was born in 1989, and so I really started watching sports where I can remember, probably around the time of, let's call it like the mid-90s, because I grew up watching the Cowboys, Dion, the Triplets, Dion, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Jay Novacek, Moose Johnson, Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer. Because I kind of grew up a Cowboys fan, but that's for a whole nother time. But also too, as I started to really, come into my own as a young person, watching Ray Lewis, Peyton Manning. I watched a little bit of Barry, but T.O., Chad Johnson, Randy Moss, but the two main people, when I'm talking about the really what I'm calling the texture of competition, was really like Ray Lewis and Dion. And I would put Peyton Manning in that mix, and even to a degree, Tom Brady in that mix, in that category, But and it also kind of goes beyond football where it goes into hip hop, Grew up in the Lox, Jadakiss, Sheek, Styles, Beanie Siegel, State Property, Beanie Siegel, Freeway, Young Guns, Jay-Z, obviously, Nas, obviously, DMX. The list can kind of go on and on and on from that era, and where it's like the element of competition and the respect and honor for competition. And I will digress shortly and say there is a part of people when they talk about toxic competition or being competitive to a toxic level. And I think that is fair and valid. But I will say that competition for me in my sphere of operation really is, I just really believe that I'm the best. And I'm striving my best to prove that I'm the best. Now, whether that's in basketball, we're talking about taking the last shot, or we're talking about, you're the quarterback of the team, are you trying to take your team down for a game-winning drive, et cetera, et cetera. But it's really just about demonstrating one's greatness. And I would also add in demonstrating one's greatness when, in what that we understand as clutch moments, big time moments, That's really what I really think about when I think about competition. Big game, big moments, big situations, playoffs, things like that, and a person's star shining the brightest. And I think a lot of it comes down to mentality. And again, it's kind of been, may Allah be pleased with our brother, Kobe Bryant passing away. I think his legacy has had a big impact in the into the morphology of the competitive mindset, where people call it the Mamba mentality, where again, you're almost psychotic about it, you're compulsive about it, you want to be, you're so hyper focused on being the best and showing that you are the best that, again, it makes you want to train more than everybody else. It makes you want to put in more work than everybody else, and really to show people that, yes, I am the best. So to compete means to, as a verb, strive to gain or win something by defeating or establishing superiority over others who are trying to do the same. I don't think there's anything toxic in that. Now, people tell about the stories of, Kobe getting on his teammates and doing those things like that. A lot of this is psychological. I don't want to tarry on this too much, but I kind of want to get to the difference in eras of how we think about competition. Now, there's a social element to this that maybe I'll do another episode on, but I really want to focus on the competitive sports aspect in both the field of athletics and also in the field of hip hop, which are both rooted in competition. But strive to gain or win something by defeating or establishing superiority over others who are trying to do the same. So you're really imposing your will on somebody else to gain an advantage. I don't see toxicity in that. So let me move on. So like I said, I came up the era of Ray Lewis, Peyton Manning, Dion, Kobe, T-Mac, AI, again, Shaq, you know what I mean? You can keep on going on down the line. And it was just about proving who was better. And it was really a demonstration of greatness, a demonstration of the mindset that I'm going to be the reason why my team has success. And I think that is captured in the attitude. You see Ray Lewis, you know, he come out on the field, do his famous dance, you know. You see Dion, famous, you know, showboat kind of things of that nature. It's getting into the mind of how these people, how they are and how they operate. And it really creates a culture of trying to be the best. I think today that culture has deteriorated. And I will say respectfully to LeBron, he's kind of fostered that deterioration of the mindset of wanting to demonstrate and be the best. LeBron is very passive aggressive. Oh, I'm the king, I'm the best, but I don't want to be looked at as the best, but I don't want to be compared to Jordan, but I'm better than Jordan, I'm better than everybody else. And it's kind of like this wishy-washy kind of thing where he doesn't want to be, he wants the, I want to say the personification, or he wants the adulation that comes with being the best, but he doesn't want to have the pressures or have the, yeah, the pressure or the weight of being the best. I will come back to that. So what is a GOAT? I think this is very important. Obviously, the acronym is greatest of all time. And as I've said in the part one of the GOAT, is it's really a supreme demonstration of ability and intellect over an extended period of time. I think that's what puts you in the category of being a GOAT. And there is such thing to me as being a GOAT, one of the greatest of all time, and being the GOAT. And I do think that it's just good, healthy conversation. I think because maybe, you know, media has taken it and gone where they've gone with it. And we've been having, I mean, especially somebody like myself, you know, I'll be 35 in June. I've been having these kind of conversations for long periods of time, you know, many, many years. And so maybe people have gotten a bit tired of having a GOAT conversation. Who's the GOAT? Who's this or that? Who's better? J. Cole, I think, said, he said something along the lines of, who's to say who's better? All we know, they ain't the same. That's very fair. But I think the conversation is just entertaining, and it gets us to be able to understand what we think about and what we value as far as the demonstration of greatness. And so I've heard people say a lot, you know, well, you can't really say, you can't cross over eras, and you can't really say this person's better than this person because, you know, situations differ. I'm going to go on the first part first. I do think you can have a fair conversation about the GOAT, even transcending eras. And I think the way that you do it is you kind of, and this is kind of like a baseline kind of way to do it without getting too scientific. You take Michael Jordan, take LeBron, take Jay-Z, take J. Cole, you know, anybody like that, Beyonce, whoever, whatever field we're talking about, and you take people from different eras. Now, if you ask people from, let's say, 1980, 1990, the year 2000, the year 2010, and 2020, you ask a group of people, you're going to probably get, so we say 80, 90, 2000, 2010, 2020, so that's 50 years, 5 decades, you're going to get, you ask 10 people, you're probably going to get 3, 4 Michael Jordans. Now, you're going to get your Kobe's in there, you're going to get your LeBron's in there, you're going to get other people mixed in there, but you're still, even so, as you go from the 80s to the 2000s, you're still going to get Michael Jordans in that category. You go again, the same thing, 80s, 90s, 2000s to 2010s, 2020s, you're going to get people saying Jay-Z is the GOAT. It's going to happen, you know, over the many decades. And I think that's a contributing factor in what makes somebody a GOAT. And you can do it in reverse. People, so LeBron, I forget the exact year LeBron joined the league, but you can go ask people that was born in the 70s and 80s, and you got, it's, I'm pretty sure some of the people out there that say LeBron is the GOAT, that watch Jordan, that watch, you know, Kareem, Magic in them, Larry Bird in them, and they still say LeBron is the GOAT. That again shows you how powerful his impact has been in the NBA to say that he's the greatest of all time. That's one way to help identify who is in the GOAT conversation. Does their impact transcend the generations without even getting into the hardcore statistical analytics, things of that nature, to try to identify who's the greatest of all time? But the other major component in this is situations, circumstances. What goes into what creates the success? And I think this is the most overlooked, underanalyzed aspect of sports. And I'll leave it just in the realm of sports. But I think it's the most undervalued and underutilized, underanalyzed aspect of sports and how we view greatness. When you look at a situation, now you can say, now again, Jordan, LeBron, Peyton, Tom Brady, any, probably Wayne Gretzky, even though I don't watch hockey. Everybody in a team sport that has achieved success has had help, clearly. So that is the baseline for me. So then when I'm now highlighting somebody as the GOAT or a GOAT, there is a individual aspect that I'm focusing on, but the circumstances still play a role. Now I'm going to use an example to kind of demonstrate what I'm talking about. So when you look at a Patrick Mahomes is clearly very talented. I like to take the definition that Will Smith gave for talent and skill, and he said, talent is what you have naturally, your God-given ability. And then he says, your skill is what you achieve after hours and hours and hours of beating on your craft, doing, putting in the work, training your mind and body to achieve a goal. I really like that definition. And so, but Patrick Mahomes' talent and skill is a part of it. And then you look at the influence of Andy Reid, the influence of brother, the coach name is Eric Bieniemy. You have Travis Kelce, great tight end. You have, at the time, you had Tyreek Hill, great wide receiver still, even though he's not on the Chiefs. And, I mean, even like this year, you look at a great coach, Steve Spagnuolo, great defensive coordinator, won Super Bowl with the New York Giants. And so all of these factors play a role in Patrick Mahomes' team and individual success, offensive line, things of that nature. All these things play a role into these individuals' success. So what makes the conversation, to me, gets it off course is, or gets it off track is, you look at a person like, I remember watching Shannon Sharp interview with Cam Newton on Shannon Sharp's podcast, Club Shay Shay. And they started talking about Justin Fields. And they were talking about how, well, Cam was really kind of talking about how, you know, long story short, you got to put some tools and things around him in order for this brother to have success. And then I believe Brother Shannon asked him, as Cam, you know, what was special about, I think it was 2015 when Cam won the MVP. And he asked him, what really contributed, or what was really special about that year when you know, Cam Newton won the MVP. And so, of course, Cam is sitting back and saying, he's like, you know, things were clicking, things were going good. Yeah, it was 2015. But he's also like, I was on the same page with Coach Rivera. You know, I could see, I can understand, or I think he said something along the lines of Coach Rivera had a level of trust in him to go out there and do what he had to do. You know, and he was also saying how he was on the same page or could understand the offensive coordinator when they were making certain play calls, or they were doing what they had to do, you know? These little nuancy things played a role in Cam Newton's success, even though we already know people that watch Cam Newton play, he was just one of them ones, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the position. But when we're dealing in the realm of team sports, the circumstance has to be taken into account when we're looking at individual success. So when you look at a Justin Fields, or when you look at a quarterback like Daniel Jones, a person will sit back and say, oh man, Daniel Jones is not a good quarterback. Okay, let's take that. And a person will sit back and say, Daniel Jones isn't a good quarterback, or isn't a starting quarterback, or whatever, however you want to label him, and say, he's not a good quarterback for these reasons. Fumbling issue, interception issue, not good with picking up offenses, not being able to be good with going through his progression as far as receiving options, things of that nature. Doesn't put up great numbers. You understand what I'm saying? And I think all of those things are very valid and outright true. Those things, as they say, the proof is in the pudding when it comes to what we're talking about, what makes Daniel Jones not a good quarterback or not a starting quarterback, how, like I said, however you want to label him. Or even, like I said, even Justin Fields. Or there are many others. But I would say to somebody, are we looking at Justin Fields, now even though he's not in Chicago, that's where he spent the majority of his time, are we looking at Justin Fields' situation, or are we looking at Daniel Jones' situation with the same amount of balance that we're looking at a Patrick Mahomes or a LeBron James or a, you know, Cam Newton or whomever? Are we able to look at these people's situations fairly? And again, I think this is overlooked because I think there's too much objectivity in the way we judge players and subsequently how we look at and how we measure the GOAT. You know, as I said in part one, people sit back and said, you know, Eli only won a Super Bowl because of defense. Go back and look at those defensive players that Tom Brady has played with over the duration of his career, even on Tampa Bay. Look at the caliber of defensive players that Tom Brady has played with just on the defensive side of the ball. One of the greatest kickers of all time, if not the greatest kicker, I don't know, but he's definitely one of the top 2-3 kickers of all time, Adam Vinatieri. Look at the coach, Bill Belichick, one of the top 5 coaches of all time. Say what you want about him now, but he's one of the top 5 coaches of all time. Again, Andy Reid, one of the top probably 5 coaches of all time. Travis Kelce, one of the top 10s, probably again, 2-3 of all time. Tyreek Hill's probably going to retire in probably the back half of a top 10 wide receiver of all time. These things matter. I mean, Daniel Jones has never even played behind even a decent offensive line. Same thing can go for wide receivers. Changing coaches all the time. Cam Newton said that he could understand the play calling from the offensive coordinator. That helped contribute to his success. All of these things contribute to success in team sports. So we have to be able to take a little bit of the objectivity out. And when we're looking at a Michael Jordan's roster and we're saying, okay, he had X, Y, and Z, this player, this role player, that role player, this defensive stopper, this rebounder, this and that. And when we're looking at LeBron saying the same thing, or when I'm, like I said, I'm looking at Kobe, I'm like, okay, Kobe won back-to-back titles. His second best player was Pau Gasol. That's certainly not bad. I'm certainly not complaining. But when I'm looking at, okay, is Pau Gasol as good as Scottie Pippen? Or as good as, now I know this for a fact, he's not as good as Anthony Davis. He's not as good as D. Wade, Chris Bosh, Kyrie Irving. He's not as good as these players. And Kobe won, he won a back-to-back title on the back end of his career. So just how we analyze situations has to be more universally understood. How we feel about a player does not and should not change how we view the team's situation overall. And that leads me to my next point. When it comes to narratives, narratives are a big problem because it really skews perception. It really just changes the way that we look at a natural situation. Now, again, any person that knows football knows that, I kind of hate to use that language. It's kind of turned into a meme at this point. What I'm saying is any person that understands the fundamentals of football understands that without an offensive line, you're just not going to have consistent success. Now, there may be some outliers in 2023, you know, in this time, this day and age, you have a person like Joe Burrow, who has not played behind a great offensive line in his career, but they have improved. But you can still chalk him up as an outlier. Go back to Tom Brady's time, Peyton Manning's time. Look at the great quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, and you would have to admit that their line play was at least on par with the rest of the league, if not superior. You look at Jalen Hurts, one of the best offensive lines in the league, you know? And so you look at a player like Daniel Jones and you're like, well, his line has been bad all of his career. Let's just keep it 100. His line has been bad. I want to digress really quick and talk about biasness. And this goes in line with narrative. The word narrative means a spoken or written account of connected events, a story. Also, a representation of a particular situation or process in such a way as to reflect or conform to an overarching set of aims or values. I'm going to read that one more time. A representation of a particular situation or process in which in such a way as to reflect or conform to an overarching set of aims or values. So when Daniel Jones is drafted at number 6 overall, the narrative begins. Oh, he's drafted way too high. Oh, he's not worthy of a 6th-round draft pick. Oh, man. I'm talking about bias real quick. I'm sorry. I have such a huge problem with bias because it only works in one direction. When you or I am in favor of something, or you're talking about a family member or, you know, somebody that you like, somebody, you know, obviously we're talking about sports, or we're talking about a team that you like, and you say or you give a complimentary statement to the entity, whatever it may be, people have the opportunity to say, oh, he's just biased. Oh, he's a homer. He's only saying that because this is his favorite team. The word prejudice bias means a prejudice in favor of or against one thing, person, or group compared with another, usually in a way considered to be unfair. Also, in statistics, it means a systematic distortion of a statistical result due to a factor not allowed for in its derivation. A systematic distortion of statistical result. And also, prejudice in favor of or against one thing, person, or group compared with another, usually in a way considered to be unfair. That means you have to be able to identify the unfair element in a person's position in order to be able to label them properly as biased. As I said in the beginning, that's why I like to use the language walk it down, because I want us to be in agreement as we begin to walk down the subject or the player or the topic. So when we're talking about the GOAT, or when we're talking about greatness, or we're talking about success, or we're talking about the fundamentals that go into what creates success or what is the cause of success, we have to break it down. We have to get down to the nitty-gritty, to the nuts and bolts. I don't like to be classified as biased because, I mean, 100% of the time when I've been classified as biased, it's really been, I've been mislabeled. And I quite frankly think it's low-hanging fruit. It's just cheap. Oh, Tone just saying this because he's a Giants fan. Or Tone just saying this because he's a Jay-Z fan. Or this or that. But if I turn around and say Jay-Z's the worst rapper of all time, or my least favorite rapper of all time, or the Giants, as I've been saying the last few months, man, the Giants are in complete disarray. Are the Giants only going to win 3-4 games? Nobody gives me any pushback on that. I don't get any, oh man, you're just saying that. I don't hear any of that. So why, when a person is speaking in a negative way about a perceived likeness, kinship, fondness for, if it's in the negative, it's all right. It's acceptable. But when it's in the positive, oh man, he's just saying that because he's a homer. Never liked that about the word or how we use the word bias. It's really just to cheapen and to marginalize and to cut short a position unfairly. Moving on. So when we're talking about narrative, it does the same thing. It marginalizes, it cuts off, and it really, or if you're doing it in a negative way or in a positive way, it creates this larger than life so-called legend, this atmosphere around a person. As I talked about with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's legend, the atmosphere that the media, the fandom sphere has created around him, makes him larger, appear larger than life. You ask a person, why is Tom Brady the GOAT? I mean, no, what happened on, so I think on Shannon's interview with Cam, he said, if I had to give you one quarterback, 2 minutes left, I think he said 80 yards to go down the field, and you had to get a touchdown, who would you go with, Pat Mahomes or Tom Brady? Cam sits back. He says, it doesn't take very long. He says, Tom Brady. And then, Shannon says, why? Cam says, that's Tom. What does that really mean? What does that really mean? Cam Newton, you're a better quarterback than Tom Brady. I'm pretty sure he knows that. Tom Brady can't do what you do. You can do what Tom Brady do. There's no way, never in his life could Tom Brady do what you do. Swap out Cam Newton in the time that Drew Bledsoe got hurt for the New England Patriots, or swap out Patrick Mahomes, or swap out Joe Burrow, swap out Brock Purdy. You'd be hard-pressed Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. You'd be hard-pressed to sit back and say that the results are going to be significantly different because of the situation. But the narrative created behind Tom Brady is so powerful. We go away from the subjectivity of the conversation. and I'm using him as a control or to show the balance in the conversation, the narrative around Daniel Jones is so powerful that the objective fundamentals and what is the cause of success for a football team, let alone a quarterback in an offense, what creates and what causes success for a football team is not allowed to be applied to Daniel Jones. Why is that? Poor line, constant rotation at head coach, offensive coordinator. No really good wide receivers. What is he really supposed to do? This is the power of narrative. Let me go ahead and move on. So can we have a goat? Okay, yeah, hold on. Yeah, so can we have a goat conversation? I think these two points go together. We have to figure out some way to put facts over feelings. To borrow, you know, my brother Chris Broussard's language. You got to be able to put facts over feelings. If you want to, if we're having this kind of conversation, if you want to just be like, you know, this is my favorite player, this is not my favorite player, this person not good, this person, and just be purely objective about it or subjective about it, cool. But if you want to kind of have fun and have a stimulating, science-based subjective conversation, we got to be able to put some of the facts over the feelings. I just think that's intelligent. It makes it fun. And so can we have a GOAT conversation? I think we can have a GOAT conversation and we're kind of following this type of criteria. People will say, you know, even though Bill Russell, I think, has 11 rings, you know, people will say, oh, well, he is playing in a league where it was only like 8 teams. Okay, that's fair. I mean, to me, that's fair. Because it would suggest that, you know, a league with 8 or 9 teams compared to a league with 30 teams, there's more competition to go around. And these guys, from what I understand, back in the early days, they weren't full-time basketball players. They were just, you know, they were part-time basketball, part-time something else, part-time, you know, plumber, whatnot. So the motivation is different. So I think that's fair. So now when I'm sitting back and I'm talking about Tom Brady, it's like, all right, well, Tom Brady, you know, I worked on, I laid out my Tom Brady non-GOAT case well enough. Let's go to LeBron, my brother. LeBron James played in one of the worst conferences in NBA history for the majority of his career, the vast majority of his career. LeBron played in the East when the East was bad. The East, probably the last few years, I'm willing to be corrected on that. But now you got Orlando to a degree. You got Boston, who's probably always been pretty good. Miami, who's pretty good now. You got the Bucks, who's pretty good now with Giannis, things of that nature. You got the Knicks, who's making a turn now. But for the majority of my life, the East has been terrible. You probably have a few teams, like I said, like Boston, that have been good throughout the duration of the time. You know, there was a certain point in time where Detroit was good. So LeBron has played in predominantly a horrible conference the majority of his career. If a person writes that sentence out about Bill Russell, when I write that sentence out about LeBron, why is that not fair? Or how is that not balanced and equaled out? Why do we have to go to another factor that takes away from Bill Russell? Like the fact that the guys that were playing with Bill Russell, you know, were part-time basketball players. Okay, again, that's fair. LeBron, I think it says, has only played one full season in his entire career. I'm looking it up real quick. It's going to come up. So 2003, 2004, I'm just going to run it down. I'm going to all the way up to 2024. 79, 80, 79, 78, 75, 81, 76, 79, 62, 76, 77, 69, 76, 74. In 2017, the 2017, 2018 season, he played one full season. Then in LA, 55, 67, 45, 56, 55, 71. LeBron James has played all 82 games in the season once in his career. That has to be a contributing. So when people are talking about, oh man, LeBron is playing the best. He's almost 40 years old, pretty much 40 years old. He's doing so great. That's a fact. We've never seen nothing and probably will never see nothing like that again. But when you're looking at it, I'm like, well, okay. I'm looking at that line the same way as a person saying Bill Russell went to, I think, 11 of 13 finals. What will we see first? Another LeBron or a person going to 13 straight finals and winning 11? I would probably bet my money on seeing another LeBron before we see that again. Now, for comparison, let's look at Michael Jordan playing 82 games. 82, 18, 82, 82, 81, 82, 80, 78, 17, 82, 82, 82, 60, 82. He played all 82 games his last season. These things got to contribute. So as much as we want to give LeBron, again, and I do give him credit for the over two decades of excellence. LeBron been the man since he came in the door. Kobe can't say that. LeBron, Jordan can't say that. That's probably a lot of people that can't say they've been the man since they came in the door. But that's like, LeBron, you don't even be playing the full season. This load management thing. Who we got tonight? The Kings. Oh, I mean, the Kings is good now. Probably this guy used another team. I'm sorry, who we got tonight? Detroit. All right, I'm not gonna play tonight. I wanted to go to see the Sixers and Golden State, I think, this year. But because of the way people be doing this low management thing, I can't spend my bread on a basketball game. I just can't do it. Maybe like in the beginning of the season. This goes back to my point about mentality. Bro, I'm playing. If I'm getting paid to play ball, this is what I love to do. Bro, if I'm not hurt, and if, I mean, I'm talking about like seriously hurt, I'm playing. I gotta do this before I go ahead and conclude. I think it's fair if I'm going to look at another individual in a certain kind of way, I have to look at myself in a certain kind of way. Now, the balance of it is, I'm not performing, you know, first of all, I'm not playing a sport. I'm a chef. It's not the same. The physical toll on the body is just not the same. What's required physically is not the same. I'm not performing in front of, you know, multi-tens of thousands of people. Night in, night out, things of that nature. But we're talking about one moment. Excuse me. we're talking about the principles, the unseen principles that are universal when we're dealing in the field of human endeavor. I'm not comparing myself to LeBron because I'm not, again, I'm not playing basketball, but he's also not doing what I'm doing. So there is a human balance in that regard. I would not say something to somebody that I'm not holding my own self to that type of standard to. Yeah, in Ephesians, in the Holy Bible, it talks about, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places." So what I'm saying is, I'm not dealing with on the physical level when I'm putting myself into this conversation. I'm dealing with the unseen principle level of the field of human endeavor. So as a young culinarian, there were, you know, I've been in a lot of pressure-filled, situations. And as I said, I grew up just very, very, very competitive. Very competitive. And so, you know, video games, debating, playing sports, you know, things like that. It was, one of my favorite things from State Property, it was get down or lay down. When you go out on in the backyard, you're playing football, whatever the case may be, whether it's one-on-ones or 7-on-7, whatever it may be, you had to show and prove. I mean, especially for brothers like myself, we like to talk. And you can't talk, you can't poke your chest out if you're not out there backing up your words with action. Very funny. I mean, I think I'm like 5'7". So I guess maybe in high school, maybe I was 5'5", or in that range. I've always been very, you know, very big. In high school, I think I was probably 300 pounds in high school. You know, I thought I could be a 300 pound tight end, 5'5" tight end, wide receiver. I used to always watch Jerry, you know, T.O., Chad, these people, Megatron, and try to emulate what they did to like a psychotic level, a delusional level. That's what it was. And every time, the majority of the time, when I would be in the position where I had to perform, anybody that listened to this, that know what I'm talking about, that know me, that was outside when we was outside, you know, young children and whatnot, fact check me. My people that I went to culinary school with, that when we were out in the alleyway doing one-on-one drills with, you know, quarterback, wide receiver, cornerback situation, fact check me. When it was time to put on, I was known to do so humbly. Because again, here comes that word, you know, bias and whatnot. And so as I, you know, went into the culinary field, I always had the same passion to be great. Always watching Top Chef, always, you know, reading material, studying material, wanting to emulate great chefs that I've seen. Remember reading the book, The Devil in the Kitchen by Marco Pierre White, the guy who trained, I'm pretty sure others, but famously trained Gordon Ramsay. Remember reading his book on the bus, changed my life. You know, being in sink or swim, get down or lay down situations in a restaurant. Being on the bus nervous, like, man, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it today. I think today's going to be the day I finally go down. I finally, you know, crumble under the pressure, you know? But Allah has blessed me with the, you know, mentality, the attitude, and the talent and the skill set to overcome difficult circumstances. But I've been in my personal little sphere of activity, I've been in pressure-packed situations. where the eyes are on you, the pressure is on you, the expectation is on you. And Allah has blessed me to overcome in those situations. So what does this have to do with LeBron? My problem is this. If you are, I'm going to use another example. They call Brian Daboll, you know, a quarterback whisperer of sorts. Quarterback savant of sorts. Right? This was, I think, I would imagine, a part of the reason why, you know, John Mara felt comfortable, Joe Shane felt comfortable bringing, that's the owner and the GM, respectively, of the New York Giants, bringing on Brian Daboll as head coach, because we're trying to develop young Daniel Jones. So, Brian Daboll, you're a quarterback whisperer. Okay. I haven't seen the evidence of that. So a person would sit back and say to me, okay, what's on? He don't got the right quarterback. Okay. If you need Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, what's my man name from San Diego? Justin Herbert. You need somebody like that? You're not a quarterback whisperer. You're just another guy that needs a good quarterback or an elite quarterback to have success. You got to have Lamar Jackson. You're not a quarterback whisperer. Because being a quarterback whisperer is you're taking something that is not on the level that it should be or has the capacity to be. This is another reason why the culinary example is seamless or analogy is seamless. Pretty sure everybody's watched the show Chopped. What kind of shows a degree or anybody watch Top Chef, they put people in non-ideal, significantly non-ideal situations to see how they handle it. I'm going to put you on a little bitty food truck and only give you a deep fryer and you come up with a Michelin star dish. I mean, this is what they do on Top Chef. I'm going to give you ground beef, fruit leather, crickets, and cocoa powder on Chopped. This type of super stuff they be doing. And they want to see what you come up with. If you need A5 Wagyu, you know, the best vanilla bean pods, the best saute pans, the best flat top, the best this and that, then it's hard for somebody to look at you and say, are you the best? Part of showing who you are is doing the most with the least. Or doing more than others with the same or less. I've been there. Tony, you can only work with X, Y, and Z. See what you, all right, make it happen. And still be held to the same standard as if I'm in optimal conditions. I've been there. So when the person is looking at LeBron and I'm taking the language of a LeBron supporter. LeBron is the king. LeBron is the best to ever do it. LeBron is the most talented player. I've heard people say this, the most talented and most intelligent basketball player to ever lace up a pair of shoes, basketball sneakers. So LeBron, my brother, if you are all of these things, and I believe to a great degree you really are, especially when people talk about the intelligence level, and then we talk about the talent level. I don't think we're ever going to see a more talented player than LeBron James. But if you need the same team around you that Dame needs, that James Harden needs, that people who are clearly not on your talent level, if you need the same team that they need, how can we really look at you as the king? Why am I looking at you as if you're the king? Why? That doesn't really make sense. You're on a team where, I remember back in the day, like, you know, you're playing kickball or you're playing dodgeball, whatever you're playing, you know, and you have, you know, the best dodgeball, kickball player on the team, and then the second best dodgeball or kickball player on the same team, people falling out. Oh, man, they about to win. They about to do X, Y, Z, X, Y, and Z. Oh, man. It kind of didn't even matter who rounded out the team. I remember it was we was in culinary school. If me and my man TJ was on the same team, I definitely don't think we've ever lost. But people, it would rarely be allowed for us to be on the same team. It really didn't matter who rounded out the team. So we're talking about LeBron James, the greatest player to ever do it, if that's what a person believes. But without any doubt, the one of the greatest, top three, top five of all time, no debate. You got Anthony Davis on your team. You got Kyrie Irving on your team. And when the Lakers lose or when LeBron doesn't have success, I always hear about the team. And the same thing is happening this year. Oh, D'Angelo Russell not doing it. He had, I think they said what he had, 0 points the other night, whatever. I didn't watch the game. Oh, man, this player not doing this thing. What's the Caucasian's name that was doing this thing last year? Austin something. Oh, man, he not doing this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, now that's fair. But isn't this LeBron James? LeBron James. Isn't this Anthony Davis? So if you need LeBron, Anthony Davis, and four of the most consistent, solidified role players, dang. I probably can make it happen with that. Joking. But I'm just, Dame can make it happen with that. James Harden can make it happen with that. A lot of people can make it happen if you're getting all that. That's what just confuses me about how we view LeBron. How we view the GOAT. How LeBron, I think, has been the poster child for the degeneration of how we view greatness. Greatness is no excuses. That's what greatness is. You overcame supreme difficulty. Eli Manning game-winning touchdown drive against the undefeated New England Patriots, quarterbacked by the GOAT, Tom Brady. That's greatness. Not making excuses. Not, oh man, this person missed a shot. This person didn't do their job. That coach didn't do this job. This person, this, bruh. What are we really doing? I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Man, people talk about J. Cole. That was the J. Cole moment before J. Cole moment. Where you like, dang. You had to go join with another superstar? Two of them, and Ray Allen, and some more pieces. Come on, bruh. It's difficult. You're making the case, you're making how I have to be able to perceive it, or I'm trying to perceive it, difficult. And then if they lose, you know, Lakers end up losing this series, it's going to be the same thing. Austin Reeves, D'Angelo, such and such, such and such. What's the coach name? I forget the brother's name, but the coach didn't do this. Now it's LeBron's 40. What do you want him to do? We're making excuses. That weakens the fabric of what we love when we're talking about the GOAT. We're making too much. We're making too many concessions for what we understand to be the GOAT. We're weakening it. for our own subjective purposes. I don't know what it is with Tom Brady, why people want Tom Brady to be the GOAT. I don't know why that is. I get a whole lot of conspiracy theories and whatnot. I'm not going to get into all that. But I don't know what that is. Yes, the man went to 10 Super Bowls, I believe it was, won 7 rings. We probably ain't going to never see nothing like that again. But to isolate Tom Brady as the GOAT strictly on the fact that he went to 10 Super Bowls and won 7 of them is very unfair. Based on circumstance. But people will look at Eli Manning and say, Eli Manning, I mean, people out there still that even debate if Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer or not. How you the GOAT and I beat you twice in the Super Bowl? You got to be fair. You got to be balanced. You got to be objective or more objective than we have been. As we continue to weaken our principles, and again, I'm not going social, I'm not going macro, this is dealing in the world of sports and rap. As we weaken the principles, it destroys the fabric of what we love. So we love LeBron. That's our brother. We love what he's done. We want him to be lauded as what we praise in the way we feel like he deserves. But we got to keep the prestige, the prestige. LeBron, you lost in 6 finals. Now, I don't know how many times you lost in the first round. Come on, bruh. Forget Jordan. Forget Kobe. You the king. Bro, you losing in the first round? That's not a good look. You the king and you got 6 losses in the finals? That's tough. I'm going to wrap it up, man. We don't want to continue to weaken the fabric of what we love because of who we love. It just ruins the game. It ruins the conversation. The same thing goes for players that we don't like, teams that we don't like. You got to be able to see the same thing and call it the same in both situations. If LeBron James would have won the back-to-back championships with Pau Gasol as his second best player, oh man, people would be going crazy. Even more crazy. Let's have fun. Let's have a fun, scientific-based, subjective conversation. That's all I'm really asking for, man. We're messing up our own culture. All right, I'm good. Thank anybody, who made it this far. I appreciate all the love. I appreciate the support. Appreciate anybody that listened to it. Man, I'm going to just go ahead and close it out, man. It's Sick Building Podcast, man. When the devil tries to keep you down, you always show up with the strategy. Peace.